content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Doris Hyde from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Marrakesh Treaty, was approved June 28th. Bob Hashey weighs in on auditory pedestrian signals. The Government Bureau of Labor Statistics on disability employment figures. Regulations of rule changes for service versus support animals in the air. Mystic Access webinars for iOS apps. Inspiration porn, an opinion by Jacob Lesner Buxton. And today's reading of Vision News is underwritten by an anonymous gift in loving memory of Joe and Kelly. For immediate release, release date Thursday, June 28, 2018, category National, by Chris Danielson, Director of Public Relations, National Federation of the Blind, 410-659-9314, extension 2330, or 410-262-1281, cell phone, mail CDANIELSEN at nfb.org. United States Senate greenlights Marrakesh Treaty and implementing legislation. National Federation of the Blind applauds Senate vote. Washington, D.C., June 28, 2018. The United States Senate today provided its advice and consent for ratification of the Marrakesh Treaty to facilitate access to published works for persons who are blind, visually impaired, or otherwise print disabled. The chamber also approved the treaty's implementing legislation, Senate Bill 2559, which will make modest adjustments to U.S. copyright law to fully comply with the treaty. For more than 6 years, the National Federation of the Blind has worked tirelessly toward this historic day for the blind of America and the world, said Mark A. Riccobono, president of the National Federation of the Blind. We applaud the United States Senate for providing its advice and consent for ratification of the treaty, as well as for passing Senate Bill 2559, the Marrakesh Treaty Implementation Act. We urge the U.S. House of Representatives to join their Senate colleagues in swiftly passing Senate Bill 2559 so that the door to expand literacy and access to the world's knowledge will be unlocked for millions of blind Americans. About the National Federation of the Blind. The National Federation of the Blind knows that blindness is not the characteristic that defines you or your future. Every day we raise the expectations of blind people because low expectations create obstacles between blind people and our dreams. You can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back. Bob Hashey's opinion on auditory pedestrian signals. I hear two different things when I ask folks about APS. Firstly, the theory says that one is supposed to get municipalities to install APS on request. But secondly, I keep hearing how municipalities are likely to whine poor mouth when faced with such requests. It sounds to me like any regs promulgated through the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, MUTCD, are merely suggestive and voluntary rather than required. It kind of reminds me of the web accessibility guidelines, which are voluntary unless you have a contract with the federal government. Most disturbing of all here is the knowledge that all APS in New York City have been replaced since 2000 and only a small percentage of them are APS. I'd say it's time for a federal law that requires all newly installed or altered traffic lights to include audio access. Given that Congress can't seem to get much done, this would be a 10 to 20 year fight, but a fight worth fighting in my humble opinion. Once again, America offers us limited regulation that only works for a fortunate few. If New York City is having such troubles given how prevalent walking is there, most other places are likely to be worse. Seems we are relatively lucky here in the Boston area. Still, I know of folks who have requested APS with no joy here. Since this is a very local issue, I recommend that each and every affiliate, whose area includes a substantial number of lighted intersections, make the advocacy for installation of APS a top priority with assistance from the national office. If folks who are in St. Louis get a chance to read this message, perhaps a plan of action might be formulated. I also recommend that the name of any campaign that is created around this issue include the word independence. It would be really cool to launch such a campaign campaign on Independence Day, the birthday of what is left of this nation. Like many other issues with which we deal, this one seems to get improvement at an extremely frustrating incremental pace, and that pace does not seem to be impacted by which party is in power. With a few notable exceptions, many of our issues are given only lip service by those who claim to represent us at the local, state, and federal levels. Signed, Bob Haishi. An article posted June 27, 2018 by the United States Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, to the Economics Daily. Employment of workers with a disability in 2017. In 2017, 18.7% of people age 16 and older with a disability were employed. That compares with 65.7% of people without a disability. More workers with a disability worked in education and health services, 21.6%, than in any other industry. Education and health services employed 33.8% of women with a disability, compared with 11.5% of men with a disability. Retail trade employed 12.7% of workers with a disability, compared with 10.8% of workers with no disability. Agriculture and related industries employed 3.1% of workers with a disability, which was twice the percentage of workers with no disability. Employed people with disabilities were nearly equally likely to work in manufacturing, 10.2%, and in leisure and hospitality, 9.0%, as people without a disability, 10.0% and 9.3% respectively. These data are from the current population survey. See Persons with a Disability Labor Force Characteristics 2017 for more information. For more statistics on people with a disability, see Demographics, Disability. Related subjects, disability, employment, industry studies. Suggested citation, Bureau of Labor Statistics, U.S. Department of Labor, The Economics Daily, Employment of Workers with a Disability in 2017 on the Internet at https://www.bls.gov/oep/TED/2018/employment-of-workers-with-a-disability-in-2017.htm. Visited July 5th, 2018. From regulations.gov, Your Voice in Federal Decision-Making, Traveling by Air with Service Animals, Advance Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, ANPRM. This proposed rule document was issued by the Department of Transportation, DOT. For related information, there's a hot link to Open Docket Folder. Action, Advance Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. Summary, the U.S. Department of Transportation, DOT or Department, is seeking comment on amending its Air Carrier Access Act, ACAA, Regulation on Transportation of Service Animals. The department has heard from the transportation industry as well as individuals with disabilities that the current ACAA regulation could be improved to ensure non-discriminatory access for individuals with disabilities, while simultaneously preventing instances of fraud and ensuring consistency with other federal regulations. The department recognizes the integral role that service animals play in the lives of many individuals with disabilities and wants to ensure that individuals with disabilities can continue using their service animals while also helping to ensure that the fraudulent use of other animals not qualified as service animals is deterred, and animals that are not trained to behave properly in the public are not accepted for transport as service animals. Dates, comments should be filed by July 9, 2018. Late filed comments will be considered to the extent practicable. Addresses, you may file comments identified by the docket number DOT-OST-2018-0068 by any of the following methods. Federal e-rulemaking portal, go to http://www.regulations.gov and follow the online instructions for submitting comments. Mail, Docket Management Facility, U.S. Department of Transportation, 1200 New Jersey Avenue Southeast, West Building, Ground Floor, Room W12-140, Washington, D.C., 205900001. Hand delivery or courier, West Building, Ground Floor, Room W12-140, 1200 New Jersey Avenue Southeast, between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, except federal holidays. Fax 202-493-2251. Instructions: you must include the agency name and docket number DOTOST 2018-0068 or the regulatory identification number RIN for the rulemaking at the beginning of your comment. All comments received will be posted without change to http://www.regulations.gov, including any personal information provided. Privacy Act. Anyone can search the electronic form of all comments received in any of our dockets by the name of the individual submitting the comment or signing the comment if submitted on behalf of an association, business, labor union, etc. You may review DOT's complete Privacy Act statement in the Federal Register published on April 11, 2000, 65FR19477-78, or you may visit http://docketsinfo.dot.gov. Docket. For access to the docket to read background comment documents or comments received, go to http://www.regulations.gov or to the street address listed above. Follow the online instructions for accessing the docket. For further information, contact Megan Johnson, Senior Trial Attorney, Office of Aviation Enforcement and Proceedings, U.S. Department of Transportation, 1200 New Jersey Avenue Southeast, Washington, D.C., 20590. Call 202-366-9342. 202-366-7152. Fax megan.johnson@dot.gov. Email. You may also contact Blaine Werke, Assistant General Counsel, Office of Aviation Enforcement and Proceedings, Department of Transportation, 1200 New Jersey Avenue Southeast, Washington, D.C., 20590. Call him at 202-366-9342 or 202-366-7152. Fax blaine.worke@dot.gov. Supplementary information. Current service animal requirements. DOT considers a service animal to be any animal that is individually trained to assist a qualified person with a disability or any animal necessary for the emotional well-being of a passenger. U.S. Airlines must transport all service animals regardless of species, with a few narrow exceptions. U.S. Airlines are not required to accommodate certain unusual service animals, such as snakes, reptiles, ferrets, rodents, and spiders. Under DOT's current rule, airlines may also refuse to carry other animals if the airline determines, 1, there are factors precluding the animal from traveling in the cabin of the aircraft, such as size or weight of the animal, 2, the animal would pose a direct threat to the health or safety of others, 3, it would cause a significant disruption of cabin service, or 4, the law of a foreign country that is the destination of the flight would prohibit entry of the animal. DOT requires foreign air carriers to transport only service dogs. However, under DOT rules, a U.S. carrier is held responsible if a passenger traveling under the U.S. carrier's code is not allowed to travel with another type of service animal, for example, a cat, on a flight operated by its foreign code share partner. Regarding emotional support animals, ESA, and psychiatric service animals, PSA, DOT requires airlines to recognize these animals as service animals, but allows airlines to require that ESA and PSA users provide a letter from a licensed mental health professional of the passenger's need for the animal. To enable airlines sufficient time to assess the passenger's documentation, DOT permits airlines to require 48 hours advance notice of a passenger's wish to travel with an ESA or PSA. ESAs and PSAs differ from one another in that PSAs, like other traditional service animals, are trained to perform a specific task for a passenger with a disability. In contrast, ESAs provide emotional support for a passenger with a mental or emotional disability, but are not trained to perform specific tasks. However, DOT expects that all service animals are trained to behave properly in a public setting. Under the existing service animal regulations, it is generally not permissible to insist on written credentials or documentation for an animal as a condition for treating it as a service animal, except for an ESA or PSA. DOT requires airlines to accept animals as service animals based on the credible verbal assurances of the passenger. Airlines may also not charge for the transport of service animals. The department's disability rule permits airlines not to transport service animals that pose a direct threat to the health or safety of others, or would cause a significant disruption of cabin service. In guidance referenced in the department's service animal rule, DOT has advised airlines to observe the behavior of the service animal to determine if it is a properly trained animal, such as an animal will calmly remain by its owner. The animal should not run freely, bark or growl at other persons, urinate or defecate in the gate area, or bite. Observing the behavior of the animal assists airline personnel in making a case-by-case determination as to whether the animal may pose a direct threat to the health or safety of others or may create a significant disruption in cabin service. Airlines are not required to accept for transport animals that do not behave properly in public, even if the animal performs an assistive function for a passenger with a disability or is necessary for the passenger's emotional well-being, as the animal could pose a direct threat to the health or safety of others and or cause a significant disruption of cabin service. The department's current service animal regulation does not contain a limitation on the number of service animals that may accompany an individual with a disability. The regulation references guidance that states that a single passenger legitimately may have two or more service animals. As a matter of enforcement discretion, the Department's Office of Aviation Enforcement and Proceedings has not taken action against airlines when airlines declined requests to transport more than three service animals for a single passenger. DOT's service animal rule also does not contain any leash, tether, muzzle, or containment requirements. Prior DOT guidance explained that a requirement for a service animal to be muzzled or harnessed would be appropriate only as a means of mitigating a direct threat to the health or safety of others, such as muzzling a dog that barks frequently. As for transporting a service animal in a carrier, an order from the Federal Aviation Administration explained that a service animal may safely sit in the lap of its owner for all phases of flight, including ground movement, takeoff, and landing, if the service animal is no larger than a lap-held child, a child who has not reached his or her second birthday. Need for a rulemaking. Consumer complaints. The department continues to receive complaints from individuals with service animals. DOT received 110 service animal complaints in 2016 and 70 service animal complaints in 2017 against airlines. In 2016, the third highest disability complaint area concerned service animals, and in 2017, it was the fifth highest. U.S. and foreign airlines reported receiving 2,443 service animal complaints received by the department concern ESAs and PSAs. Most of the service animal complaints involving ESAs or PSAs are from passengers with disabilities who are upset that the airline is not accepting their animals for transport. Unusual species. The use of unusual species as service animals has also added confusion. Passengers have attempted to fly with peacocks, ducks, turkeys, pigs, iguanas, and various other types of animals as emotional support or service animals. Airlines have expressed concerns about the amount of attention and resources that are expended when having to accommodate unusual service animals. Disability rights advocates have voiced alarm that these animals may erode the public's trust, which could result in reduced access for many individuals with disabilities who use traditional service animals. Advocates have also expressed concern that these animals lack the ability to be trained to behave properly in a public setting. Pets, misbehavior by service animals, and airport are further paragraphs, but this is running way too long. Skipping to the most relevant paragraph, request for data and comments. In this ANPRM, the department solicits comment on the following issues. 1. Whether psychiatric service animals should be treated similar to other service animals. 2. Whether there should be a distinction between emotional support animals and other service animals. 3. Whether emotional support animals should be required to travel in pet carriers for the duration of the flight. 4. Whether the species of service animal and emotional support animal that airlines are required to transport should be limited. 5. Whether the number of service animals or emotional support animals should be limited per passenger. And 6. Whether an attestation should be required. should be required from all service animal and emotional support animal users that their animal has been trained to behave in a public setting. 7, whether service animals and emotional support animals should be harnessed, leashed, or otherwise tethered. 8, whether there are safety concerns with transporting large service animals, and if so, how to address them. 9, whether airlines should be prohibited from requiring a veterinary health form or immunization record from service animal users without an individualized assessment that the animal would pose a direct threat to the health or safety of others or would cause a significant disruption in the aircraft cabin. And 10, whether U.S. airlines should continue to be held responsible if a passenger traveling under the U.S. carrier's code is only allowed to travel with a service dog on a flight operated by its foreign code share partner. The department is committed to ensuring access for service animal users on aircraft, but also recognizes that airlines have a responsibility to ensure the health, safety, and welfare of passengers and employees. The department requests data on the number of service animals that travel by air annually and the number of behavior-related service animal problems that occur annually. The department also requests this data separately for emotional support animals, if available. The department is taking this action to ensure that the air transportation system is safe and accessible for everyone. Questioning Inspiration Porn by Jacob Lesner Buxton. For the past 4 or 5 years, the term inspiration porn has been gaining notoriety in the general public. For those unfamiliar with the term, the inspiration porn describes stories where people with disabilities are shown doing amazing things, like shooting basketballs and rock climbing. The message of these stories is that since people with disabilities can reach their goals, then everybody can. For me, inspiration porn also includes stories about non-disabled high school students doing nice things for peers with disabilities. Many of these nice things seem to revolve around including these students in activities like the prom or athletic events. Television reports seem to portray these activities as rites of passage for high school students. From watching these reports, one gets the impression that students with disabilities don't have the social skills to partake in these experiences without help from their able-bodied peers. According to these reports, attending prom and football games magically made these students normal. A search on YouTube brought up more than 260 news clips of what I would term inspiration porn. In the videos, students with disabilities are shown scoring touchdowns or dancing at prom. While it's nice to take someone to a dance or let them score a goal, to me, it's not newsworthy. I wonder what's going through the mind of the person who decides to report the news to the media. Do they find the idea of a student taking a peer with a disability to a dance intriguing? Perhaps they feel that the person being on local news will improve the self-esteem and happiness of the student. It's interesting that in many of the clips, the reporters try to get the students to smile. Perhaps the reason why the student is not smiling is that the teen is uncomfortable with the attention. For instance, the Today Show showed a student with autism being serenaded by an opera singer about him being lonely. "Why do you have to sound so sad?" he asked her. I'm dismayed that some television producers don't notice how uncomfortable some students are and shelve the story. Perhaps they feel that the feelings of students are secondary to the ratings of the station. Maybe they assume that no one would complain about inspiration porn-type stories. However, they might be wrong in assuming that no one will take issue with inspiration porn-type stories. I found a report where a cheerleader asked a student with autism to the prom by doing a choreographed routine with the school marching band. After the dance number, the cheerleader looks uncomfortable when the guy tries to give her a hug. In the comments under the video, people were thinking that the cheerleader might have organized this event as a promotional stunt, based on her reaction to the student. Even if everyone in the story has the best interest of the student with the disability at heart, reporters often gloss over interesting angles in these reports. For instance, there was a story about a student who found a prom date after being rejected 7 times. Instead of exploring the reasons why the student could have been turned down, the reporter heaped praise on the woman for being charitable. Also in these stories, it's interesting that all of the students interviewed seem to heap praise on the teen with the disability. If I was in 8th or 9th grade, I know some students would have a problem with the media running a piece on how great I was. Back then, I was sad that I didn't have many friends, yet I rejected many offers of friendship because they didn't appeal to me. I wouldn't be surprised if, in some of the 260-plus stories, there's footage of students talking to reporters about how rude their disabled peers are that are left on the cutting room floor. Television stations that produce these clips aren't looking for a dialogue about the dynamics of ableism. Rather, they're looking for a feel-good story to follow the reports about crime, political corruption, and budget cuts. When I discuss the concept of inspiration porn to high school students, I get a lot of different reactions. Some people think the clips are in good taste, while others start cringing after 10 seconds. The students' reactions are similar to those I see in the comments sections on YouTube. Comments critiquing the tone of the stories are answered with people calling the posters heartless bastards. Rather than trying to explain the concept of inspiration porn on YouTube, it would be interesting to see a longer analysis on the subject. The piece could explore the question of what is a normal high school rite of passage and why there is so much focus on trying to give that experience to students with disabilities. Also, the report could examine ways the student body could support those with disabilities in other ways, besides helping them score a football goal. For example, the students could organize a letter-writing campaign to prevent the state cutting services to students with disabilities. The story would be enhanced if it were written, directed, and produced by students with disabilities. That way, those students who are interested in having a career in media could build a portfolio they could use in the future, maybe to get a job at a station that devoted a lot of time to making inspiration porn. Devoting a blog to critiquing inspiration porn might seem like a silly thing to write about with all that is going on in the world. However, every time the media shows a clip of a student scoring a touchdown, they are ignoring stories of problems that youth with disabilities face. Cuts to vocational services, an unemployment rate of 73%, and a lack of affordable housing are some of the challenges that youth with disabilities face coming out of high school in 2018. Based on the track record of the mainstream media, I am not expecting them to give up producing inspiration porn. However, by continuing to educate the public on the realities of people with disabilities, advocates can ensure encourage consumers of media to have healthy skepticism when viewing these stories. From www.mysticaccess.com. Introducing Mystic Access Events. Informative, fun, and available from wherever you are. We are dedicated to sharing the enriching, exciting, and even the frustrating aspects of learning assistive technology with as many people as possible. In addition to our free, professionally produced podcast, we are now very pleased to be offering free regular virtual events to those who are interested in learning about assistive technology related topics in a fun and relaxed atmosphere from the comfort and convenience of your own space. In our informative and enjoyable events, you can expect to discover valuable information on a variety of assistive technology topics, as well as other practical tips with which you can utilize on a regular basis to enrich and simplify your work life on and offline. Learn relevant information from a blindness perspective. We won't be telling you to press the red button or to wait until the light turns blue. We are totally blind professionals who will meet you where you live and help you to progress steadily from that point. Enjoy an interactive and engaging atmosphere with personal examples and humor thrown into the mix. Yes, we screw up too. And yes, we usually laugh about it later. Have the opportunity to ask questions and participate in class discussions. Events are way more interesting and fun when we get to talk with you about what you're experiencing. Be taught by seasoned professionals who have used assistive technology both personally and professionally for decades. Oh, and we also think we're very down to earth and a lot of fun. We hope you will too. What are Mystic Access events about? Topics you can expect to discover more about in our events may include iOS, Android, FireOS, and PC-related info, including maintenance, navigation, and apps, and programs that we think you'll find useful. WordPress.org, including tips for creating websites, blogs, accessible and helpful plugins, and more. Getting the full potential out of your assistive technology products. Personal coaching and mindset tips to make using your assistive technology an easier, more pleasurable, and more productive experience. There's more at mysticaccess.com/events. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.